Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, helping home buyers and sellers in Middle Tennessee for 20 years. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com in studio with us for the next hour. PK, great to have you in with us again today.
Good morning, boys. I can tell you there's a nice offer going on right now at Zen Sports. If you sign up at Zen Sports, a great new, relatively new betting app, using code TNPaul, you bet $10 and you get a free membership, free year membership to paulkuharski.com.
Look at there.
They give you 5% back of what you bet in the first 15 days and then up to 3% back of what you bet every month. So it's a sweet deal. Free membership, TNPaul at Zen Sports.
By the way, going to have a lot of Kuharski this week for the next hour, and then he's in for me on Friday. So a lot of PK this week.
A lot of early alarms this week. It had a 5 o'clocker in Cleveland, 5 o'clocker coming up on Friday.
Yeah, boomers. Boomers like to wake up early. You're fine.
I mean, I might be a boomer in every way, but in terms of the waking up early, I have not joined the club.
So I want to throw out a few other celebrity couple sports crossover. Romo, people have put on the text line and personal text line. Romo, Jessica Simpson.
Yep. Romo dated Carrie Underwood,
Simpson,
too.
Such a C level.
You got A-Rod, J-Lo.
But that's big.
Jeter, different. Yeah, you know, the whole Jeter.
Jeter, Jessica Biel was right. Big.
Brady, Giselle Bundchen. Was that right?
Yes. Also, maybe the best.
Brady ever. And Moynihan.
Yeah.
The breast.
The breast. We see where all of these celebrity women are taking Jill.
Oh, good God.
He needs to step out of the room for a few minutes.
Let's not bring up Alyssa Milano.
Good God. The breast ever. I was just, God dang it, so flustered. You should know the best ever, PK. The best ever of these.
Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe.
There you go. Oh, yeah. You did it. All right. Also,
the social media was just crazy. Yes,
it was with going those nuts. Two.
Oh yeah, can you imagine?
Twitter was off the rails.
This might be. Did you?
They had to reset the app. Oh, yeah. So many times.
Did you see this text from Chris, Robbie?
No,
I'm going to show it to you, PK. Check this out. This might be the best text we've ever gotten. So we all know this gif of the boyfriend walking with the girlfriend. Yeah. He's looking back at the girl walking the other way. So in this instance, it's that same like doofy boyfriend with
in
the blue
middle.
Shirt. He's got Dion as like the girlfriend, angry look at him as he stares at Taylor Swift going the other way.
Absolutely, ESPN,
and
this,
ESPN
weekend.
This weekend. That's absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
I would love. I mean, you talk about finding a good story. If somebody could find the people in that picture and do a story about them. And how many
that, you
memes
think that's an
have
actual,
been made?
You think that's an actual real picture?
Yeah, I think it's a stock photo that people have taken and turned into a billion things. You think it's AI generated? It's pretty old.
Isn't the girlfriend and the girl walking the other way the same person?
I don't think so.
I don't know, but even if it's the same person, I think she's a person.
To your point, I would like to.
That would be an epic story.
It would.
If you could find them and talk to them about their favorites and the setting of that photo and if they thought, I mean, how surprised they are that it turned into a massive thing.
Yeah,
that's got to be one of the most used.
Oh yeah,
memes.
Oh yeah, and then used in different ways. Kind of like the Jordan crying meme.
But
no, you're right.
I'd love a story about Jordan and his thoughts on all the crying memes. But I don't think he'd open up on that.
I don't know that he would either.
Yeah. Well, as long as he could do a 10-hour hagiography in which he's an infallible person who never lost a game.
Dude, the worst thing about that was just how many like Knicks fans just spent the whole COVID talking about how much they love Jordan. I was like, this guy kept us from championships. Why are we in love with him?
Right.
I mean, he's tremendous, but we hated him, didn't we?
PK, Titans get crushed on Sunday in Cleveland. There's all sorts of different issues we could talk about that. We've talked a lot about the offensive line. I want to start on Burks because we were talking about Treylon Burks earlier in the show today. He made the 70-yard play against the Chargers that obviously changed the game, and the offense got rolling after that. That's basically been about it from Treylon Burks. He was invisible in the New Orleans game. He ends up one catch for 5 yards on Sunday against Cleveland on 6 targets. Has a couple of drops in the game, too. What are you seeing from Burks right now, and how concerned do you think the Titans should be about his lack of production to this point in the season?
Well, he's got 13 targets and 6 catches. That is not a good rate. I think they should be concerned, but I think it's their fault to a degree. Blake Bedingfield wrote about this in detail at my site on Monday. But if you've got an offensive line, which they was predictable that they were going to need to keep help in, particularly against some of the rushers they faced, then you've got limited people out on routes and you need to win quickly with separation. Generally, you don't have time for route craft and all of these things to be the things that help you win. And the two or three receivers who are going out can't win that way. Burks can gather steam and speed that on the 70-yard route. I think he was one of the he hit 22 miles an hour or something like that. But he's not hitting 22 miles an hour in the first 6 yards.
Right.
And they are super reluctant to look at a guy like Flowers. I'm not saying Flowers solves their problems, but when the draft comes around and you look at those small, darty receivers, the Titans just have no place in their heart for guys like that. Now, you could look at Kyle Phillips. Kyle Phillips is a different kind of guy, though.
But facing, I think he could help.
Yeah, he certainly could help.
A lot.
But he's a facing the quarterback guy, right, who's not going to be a big yak guy. Now, he'll convert a third down for you,
right,
but he's not going to be a much of a downfield threat. He certainly could help. But they've got Hopkins, who's got a win on routes and small windows, which become hard when you're being rushed so well. Burks, who needs time to gather speed. NWI, who, is reliable for Tannehill but was invisible in this game. And if those are the three guys who are out, Chris Moore's good for one big catch a game. But when that's contributing to 94 yards of offense, what does it matter? So the match between what they have to go out on routes when they're keeping people in to block, it doesn't fit. And in terms of keeping people in to block, I think Odukoya, they got to start the clock on this guy. He needs 3 weeks out of the exemption on the practice squad to be activated off the practice squad or to be signed to the 53-man roster. But how long can you be loyal to Wesco in this role? And Chig's not blocking well.
Yeah. It's the Chig part of this too, like just the lack of impact that they've had offensively. And look, I know Sunday, we've talked about this, the line was getting caved in from start to finish in that game. So how much do you really evaluate the skill players? But there were plays to be made by Burks, and he just didn't make them on Sunday. And I know there weren't very many of them, but there's got to be, I said this earlier, I think a point of emphasis from the coaching staff try to get him the ball on Sunday early and often. Because if he's not a big part of the offense, I don't see how this offense can be good enough to win on any sort of consistent basis.
I'd agree on that, but you could say that about a bunch of guys. Their philosophy is to spread it around. But if Chig had a big game, that would be a good sign. Or if Spears had a big receiving game, that would be a big sign. Yep. So, I think you could say
that
about
that,
a bunch of.
Yeah, but don't
guys.
You think that Burks has a higher ceiling in terms of explosiveness, big plays,
sure, and sure.
A guy who needs to consistently contribute, right?
But if he gets that 170-yard catch, that could be a winning Sunday for him. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, do that every week.
Sure. If he and Moore each make a big play every Sunday and the rest of them are sprinkled in, there are all kind of recipes, obviously, for them to be much more effective offensively. And all of it starts with Tannehill having a little bit of time to not be killed every time he needs a minute, a second in the backfield.
Do you think that that they thought, I guess, that there was a chance that Andre Dillard could handle? I guess it's obvious that they did, because he was left out there, to me, more than he should have been, and certainly on that last play of the half.
Well, the last play of the half, I think their rationale is reasonable. Tannehill says it's a fast-developing play. They need more people out because it's crowded down there with defenders.
Okay. All right, hold on.
They
have
to have a chance.
So you've seen that play. Now you watch the All-22.
Yes.
Okay. So Spears goes to the flat. So great, you draw a defender. I don't care if that defender wants to come too. They can all come. Myles Garrett is coming in 0.5 of a second.
Well, you've got to do better than 0.5 of a second. Dillard has to do better on that play. They're counting on Dillard to delay him a little bit.
Well, why?
Once in a while.
Why are you counting on that? Don't count on that. Have Spears chip him.
I understand the argument. Now, I immediately thought that you have to chip him. But once in a while, your guy has to be able to make a play.
That's fine, but on that play, you cannot do anything but score a touchdown or sail the ball. Like, if you lose 3 points in that game at that point, that's disastrous.
Well, we talked about this earlier. Like, I don't even like the Spears run into the flat because you're not throwing him the ball there. Because
if he's
tackled
running to the flat, why not chip?
Exactly.
Mike Herndon has this in the piece that I've posted at paulkuharski.com. For Dillard, they slid protection to his side or chipped with the running back or tight end on 14 of their 25 non-screen dropbacks. Should that number have been higher? I think we'd all say yes, certainly in hindsight. But asking a guy on, 11 plays that are surely designed to be quick, to be functional? I mean,
if you're an NFL pro,
you got to be occasionally functional.
Look, they left Dylan Raiden's out there on Bosa a few times, and he was okay. I mean, yes, I'm not saying you never do it, but on that play, you do it.
Yeah. No, I in the moment, I certainly said the same thing. And I haven't looked that closely at where the receivers went. But if Spears is going to the flat there, I agree with you. Like, on the way out, help.
What more with Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans secondary and how to go about fixing that. Is there a fix in the secondary as they move forward? All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Stand back. There's a hurricane coming through.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We continue our conversation with Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com. Taking your thoughts as well on the Titans on our text line, 615-737-1025. PK, not a great day for really anybody on the Titans the other day, but the secondary, again, so you're talking about the Saints game, over 300 yards passing for Derek Carr, over 300 for Justin Herbert and the Chargers. Deshaun Watson, who had looked lost really ever since he stepped foot in a Cleveland Browns uniform, looked pretty good the other day. Looked like Deshaun Watson.
His best passer rating since he's in Cleveland.
Yep, 123.4 was the rating for Watson the other day. I thought in particular it was a really bad day for Christian Fulton, maybe one of the worst I've seen in a Titans uniform from him. What did you make of Fulton specifically? And the Titans secondary, like, we keep talking about how good the Titans are against the run and how teams don't try to run the ball. They keep talking about it too. Teams don't try to run the ball against them, and maybe that played into why they were the number 32 pass defense last year by the numbers. But I keep watching the numbers and the games go by, and the conclusion that I'm forced to draw, PK, is Titans secondary is just not very good, and I don't see that changing based on the recent history of what we've seen on the back end there. What do you make of where that secondary currently is?
It's not very good. And, this is a game where you get Hooker and Fulton back. So, it should have trended up. The pass rush, didn't affect things enough. You think, the secondary survives a lot of times because the pass rush. Simmons said, we were in the backfield all the time. Well, you're in the backfield all the time, but you weren't affecting the quarterback all of the time. So, I have some concerns about what the defense thinks is important, I think, sometimes. We stop the run. Well, 78 yards rushing isn't, collapsing the run.
It's not terrible.
Especially
against the Titans.
But it's not winning.
Functional.
Like, how do you cite it as a positive when you give up 27 points on a day that your offense scores three? Fulton was terrible to give up a perfect passer rating. They were committing penalties. Look, you can complain about the penalties. The one defensive holding against Sean Murphy bunting I thought was bad. The rest of them, I think, were all okay calls. if you're going to bemoan the officiating, the worst call in the game is against Cooper on the other side, who didn't step out of bounds. It was an egregiously bad call. So if you're saying we got screwed by calls, well, they took a touchdown off the board for the other team. So you hardly got screwed to that degree. Chris Harris came in and was supposed to, revise the technique as the defensive passing game coordinator. And you still see corners not turning their head to find the ball, which I thought would be like the biggest, easiest fix in these guys. I do think McCreary has played better in that.
He's been good.
But the other guys, Murphy Bunting, if he's going to be this physical, and again, I'd refer to Blake Bedingfield, who says he's got a reputation now for that, and they're going to look for it. So where's the adjustment off of that, knowing that they're looking for you to do that? And Fulton, I think, is a little bit of a mental project now where, I don't know what he comes in. Everybody's high on him, the new training regimen and all of that. Pulls a hamstring, misses a game, gives up some plays, and seems like he's on a downward slope. So it's just disappointing all around. But giving up the big plays, whether they're catches or penalties, is just the tragedy of this team right now defensively.
Yeah, I feel like that's the thing. Coming into the stadium Sunday, I said this earlier this week, but – it's like I'm listening to the Cleveland radio, and all they're talking about is like, the one thing today, forget the run. This is one of the worst secondaries in the NFL. You can do whatever you want. This has got to be Watson's day. And I'm listening, I'm like, you guys don't have a clue. I mean, Fulton's coming back and Hooker's coming back. I mean, I've kind of changed my mind on those guys based on this last game. I mean, Hooker's good. We know this, right? He makes plays. And I still think Fulton should be this team's best corner. But – I mean, that was highly disappointing to me, the way they played. And overall, I think this is one of those, for me, mea culpa, where it's like we talked so much about the Titans being underrated, right, by the national NFL media. And that was one of the – I mean, I thought this defense had a chance to be special, and I don't think that anymore. I'm fading on that.
I'm fading on that, too. That's early, and you have to, because the fan base wants the red meat, you have to – pull back a little on that. They've been in bad situations like this before. They tend, when they're healthy, to get better and figure some things out. But at certain spots, if you just don't have the talent, and this is where I could object, or you could go back to Mike Vrabel saying, I don't want to be known for coaching talent. Well,
you love that one.
Well, that's fine. If you have a left tackle who you could really mold into something and you want to be able to say, well, we took this guy and turned him into something. But if you've got a Dennis Daly or seemingly an Andre Dillard, there's only so much of a ceiling. Well, you better find and coach some talent, no?
Yeah, and Vrabel's not just coaching.
Yeah, right. Find and coach.
Well, and that takes us back to the conversation we were having earlier on Vrabel. I mean, it was pretty interesting. We were trying to basically like take the temperature of the Titans fan base of how they're feeling about Vrabel. We got a lot of Titans fans mad at Vrabel on the text line.
I agree with what Joe was saying. Be mad at him. Look, it's perfectly reasonable, beyond reasonable, to be totally pissed off at the Titans right now and to wonder about Vrabel. But I'm telling you, every time you call for a coach to be fired, I need you to tell me who you're going to get that's going to be better. And John Robinson, for all his faults, when he hired Vrabel, said he was looking for a leader of men. And Mike Vrabel is a leader of men. And if you look around the league, there are some coaches who are not leaders of men. And being able to lead men is a big deal. I think Mike Vrabel, in the big picture overall, remains an excellent coach. Franchises have ups and downs. I understand the ups weren't good enough and that the downs now look horrible. But the thing that serves this franchise the best, that serves every franchise the best, is stability. All right? And I guarantee you, if Mike Vrabel gets fired, and I don't think he will get fired after this year, no matter how bad it is, if Mike Vrabel gets fired, he gets another job. To the point where somebody would fire somebody that they weren't thinking about firing to get him.
I agree.
All right? Ken Whisenhunt was not getting another job. Mike Mularkey was not getting another job. Mike Munchak was not getting another job. All those guys were below average NFL head coaches in the big picture.
Mularkey was average.
Mularkey was on his third job.
Yeah,
and got lucky because Amy loved him. And the Bills, who were not that crappy.
1 year.
I mean, were the Jags crappy in part?
This is turning into a Mularkey.
I like Mularkey, but were the Jags crappy in part because he was their coach? Yes. He would get hired again. And then who are you counting on to hire to replace him? You would get some, I suspect, San Francisco connected Rand Carthon friend. Maybe that's exciting because San Francisco's, you know, offensive craft stuff. But is he?
Does Kyle Shanahan have a nephew out there somewhere?
Yeah. But is that person have the gravitas that Vrabel has to stand up in front of the room, which is a much bigger deal than people give it credit for? I'm telling you, be stable and put Vrabel out there for a long time until he really proves he can't do it. And I believe he can do it. They got to cycle through this personnel thing. And I understand he's responsible for a lot of what's coming through. But when I tweeted you guys that Robinson's fingerprints are on this team as long as they have guys like Treylon Burks. I wasn't ditching Burks, but Burks is the ripple effect of A.J. Brown, yep. Right? Dylan Raidens and Nicholas Petit-Frere, whatever they turn out to be, are the ripple effects of Isaiah Wilson.
Who's available, by the way, but he's on the text line.
Those ripple effects are going to last a long time. And so Vrabel's fingerprints on personnel additions along with Carthon, probably 2-3 years out here still. I think you got to be patient and endure and be stable.
God, you're such a Vrabel homer. Fire Vrabel and Kaharski. Fire you both.
I love Mike Vrabel, and I think he's good. And I understand bemoaning the struggle right now, and I'm surprised, frankly, by the degree of the struggle. But I think it's largely a reflection of the personnel still.
How much do you think? Because
also, he's going through, he's at the beginning of a quarterback transition.
Yeah. I mean, how much do you think this is?
Will Levis is going to be big for Mike Vrabel, obviously.
Yeah, for sure. Yes. How much do you think this the fan, because like the fans have every right to be upset. It's not just a bad team, right? You know, it's not just 9 losses in 10 games. It's hard to watch football. I mean, it's
The Titans have a long history of that. I mean, fans are used to that. Jeff Fisher was hard to watch football.
But
Mike Munchak,
but you know, it wasn't
football.
That long ago that the two guys that they still brought back this year were part of one of the most exciting offenses in the NFL.
Yeah, and which was an exception. And I said at the time, like, savor this because this isn't common and it's doubtful that you're going to have it.
But, I mean, I wonder how much this beyond that is just kind of, you know, because Vrabel can be, I think he can, like, when things are going poorly, his personality, as we talked about earlier, it can rub people the wrong way. When things are going well, people love that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think the question, too, is, and I may try to ask him about it this week, how much is he a stay-the-course guy, and how much is he a I-need-to-kind-of-change-my-approach-on-some-of-these-things guy?
He'll love that question.
And he was a stay-the-course guy in sticking with Tim Kelly by far, and I think that's a lot of people's primary complaint, looking at what they've done through 3 games, which is not a large sample. It's a bad sample.
You think it should be a primary complaint?
Well, I complained about it.
About Tim Kelly's work so far.
No, not – well, I mean, his work so far is handcuffed by that offensive line, but the choosing not to help Dillard more is a Tim Kelly-worthy complaint.
Yeah, I'm not saying he's been perfect.
But this refusal – you know, look, Vrabel's had success bringing in guys and developing coaches in a lot of cases. Ryan Crow, good outside linebacker coach who developed, right? There are a lot of examples of that. But he also had the whole league in a lot of ways to pick from for an offensive coordinator and stays in-house to a guy who was, you know, in effect Todd Downing's apprentice. And when you have 2 years that bad and the guy's title was passing game coordinator and the passing game was horrific, I think fans can rightfully ask questions until they see better.
But there's more context to that we can get to I have a response to that.
Yep, we'll get into all that coming up next. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Take more of your thoughts for PK as well on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Paul Koharski from PaulKoharski.com here with you, brought to you by Zen Sports.
Hey, if you go to Zen Sports right now, sign up using the code TNPAUL, you get a free annual membership to PaulKoharski.com. We could read Mike Herndon right now on the Titans' alternatives on the offensive line. And then you get 5% back of your bets for the first 15 days, up to 3% back monthly after that. So go to Zen Sports and use TN Paul.
Joe, you had a response to PK in the conversation that we closed off with the last segment.
Yeah, but you got to remind me because people are texting like, you're my best friend and stuff. You know, like,
Tim Kelly, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, your description there is he was the apprentice of – I mean, he was a successful offensive coordinator who came here, who they wanted to hire previously. They didn't get him.
Correct.
He came here for a year to get in here, and he changed it to his offense. So, you know, like your description there, which I understand you know all the context, but if you were, like an alien coming from space trying to find out about the Tennessee Titans right there, that would have been a bad description. By the way,
that's fair.
They're going to kill us all first.
That's
our,
good.
Our
that's
jobs fair. Are
there are no
talking
aliens.
About sports.
No,
really?
Or,
you don't
no,
think so?
No, listen, if there are aliens, Neil Tyson deGrasse or whatever his name is has the great description. Like, they're smarter than us to the degree that they just have no interest in us.
Just leave us alone.
Yeah.
Like,
I hope
if
so.
They have the ability to come here, which is well beyond our abilities.
Right.
If they have those abilities, then what's interesting about us?
Well, but they might just, you know, at some point just harvest us for our organs. I don't know.
They don't need our organs. They repair themselves.
How do you know? They're smarter than you. You don't know what they need.
They don't need what we have.
Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
They're coming down to study our
Dylan. Dylan, your thoughts on the Titans, aliens, anywhere you want to take it. The floor is yours.
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, I actually had a question because I think it plays a big role in like what's happening. But you know, I'm not a like professional like you guys, not a writer or anything. But what about like second contracts? How the Titans don't really sign guys to second contracts? And the three I can name is like Adoree Jackson, Jack Conklin, and AJ Brown. Like the three positions we need bad right now.
Well, Adoree Jackson, stay on the line. Adoree Jackson.
Yeah.
Showed no desire to play football in his last year here. So you want them to sign Adoree Jackson, given his attitude at the end?
Conklin's a fair point.
They got in a peeing match with AJ Brown, and Robinson said, "Well, I'm not going to lose ground to you. I'll go do better," which was a terrible move. Conklin, I didn't have a problem with at the time, based on the money he was going to be worth, and he didn't play great coming back from the knee injury. The thing about Conklin is you have to replace him well, and they failed miserably. They spent a first rounder, then a second rounder, then a third rounder to replace him, and we don't even know if Nicholas Petit-Frere is good. So the thing is, when you give up on a guy and decide to replace him, when you decide, hey, Roger Saffold is too beat up and we need to move on, that's fine. But you have to go get a guy. You can't just say, oh, we'll just stick Aaron Brewer there.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of my point, is that we don't sign people to second contracts and then fill their roles, like, very poorly, and then they go off somewhere else and play decent to great, such as, like, A.J. Brown and stuff like that. That's kind of what I was trying to say, you know.
Hey, thanks for the call, Dylan. Appreciate it. But that's the thing, though, too, Joe. Like, the second contract part of this, the A.J. Brown one is by itself. It's a trade. We all know. We don't have to rehash that. It was horribly handled by John Robinson and the Titans. Like, Conklin is the one guy that went on to a second deal elsewhere and really played well. Like, Jonnu Smith.
All-pro season.
Yeah, like, Jonnu
Smith. But
Jonnu Smith
and Corey Davis were smart, no second contract.
Exactly. And Adoree Jackson, I mean, shouldn't have signed him to a second contract.
That's they signed Jeff Simmons to a second contract.
Exactly. And it was smart not to sign those guys that we just talked about to a second contract.
They signed Bowen,
Maybe not the greatest picks, and that's where it starts.
Conklin's interesting because I agree coming off the knee, but when that offensive line got rolling in 2019, he was back to like being Jack Conklin. And that, so at that point, I was like, man, you know, that's – and I know at that point they also had Dennis Kelly, so they kind of thought, great, but then they
Well, it wasn't
quickly,
Dennis Kelly that they were counting on. They were counting on Isaiah Wilson. They spent a first-round pick to replace Jack Conklin.
Yes.
A first-round pick.
So, yeah, here's a text I got earlier from Kyle Tucker, which is, I mean, it's kind of an interesting way to sum it all up. He said, the craziest thing about the Titans is they're like three moves from being awesome. Keep AJ and Drafter sign two good linemen in the last 2 years. They'd be awesome. I don't know if they'd be awesome, but you know what? I mean, honestly, if they just had two good choices at offensive line and they had AJ Brown, how much better would Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry be performing right now?
Also, think of this. You know, so they blew the Isaiah Wilson pick, which prompts the Ravens pick.
Yep.
Who doesn't play nearly well enough, which prompts the Petit Frere pick. So there are three picks for one spot where you could have spent two of those picks on other things, maybe dynamic playmakers. And now you're in position again where you're going to have to draft a left tackle probably, which again takes you away from a dynamic playmaker or an elite corner. Two things that are other big needs. So you're constantly pouring resources into offensive line to make up for mistakes.
Yeah. By the way, you've drafted two quarterbacks in that span too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's
one of whom's going to be backup at best.
Right.
Yeah. Now it's if you draft poorly and then you stack poor drafts, it'll turn on you quickly in this league.
Well, and that goes back to the Vrabel discussion, right? Like he's moving forward, like the John Robinson part of it, Vrabel and his decision making is going to be way more tied to the roster as they move forward. Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in Jared. Jared, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Hey, so, yeah, I agree with Paul's take on Vrabel. I really do think he's a top-tier coach. I'm not at all in favor of a discussion to move on from him. My question is about the salary cap in 2024, kind of looking ahead. What I've read is we should be in at least a much better position than we are right now, flush with some cash. But just kind of curious if you could talk on that and just the dead cap money. I mean, just kind of looking through the players that aren't on the roster this year that we're paying some big money to in dead cap space, like Dupree, Julio Jones, and those guys, even Cunningham. How much does that impact, what we're able to do in terms of adding some weapons this year, and how much of that is on Robinson? Enjoy the show, guys.
Well, they've got, I think, roughly $90 million next year, but they've also got 35 players under contract.
Right.
So the $90 million needs to be spent to fill out a 53-man roster, which they have a long way to go. If they move forward with Levis and Willis, not having a big number at quarterback helps you in a monstrous way. The dead money guys that you mentioned will disappear, but they do have voidable years, which add up to some money on Tannehill, on Henry, on Dillard, if he's done after a year, will cost him $8 million, I think, next year. So some money that adds up. But that's the way of the world, and Robinson pushed a lot of money into future years to keep things moving.
I'm getting absolutely barraged by your buddy Stilly, who, first of all, thinks Mike Mularkey is like Vince Lombardi. Also, now he's
crying. Did he get his autograph like Laviolette?
Now he's crying about the cap, of course. But this is an interesting point he brings up. I don't think he's right. He says the Petit Frere pick wasn't for Ravens; it was to replace Lawan. I think Petit Frere projected as a right tackle in the NFL. I know he played left tackle at Ohio State, but Jack Conklin played strictly left tackle at Michigan State.
Right.
Yeah,
it was not to replace him.
Yeah, I don't think you're right there, Stilly. As far as for your other stuff, you are right. Mularkey is possibly the greatest coach of all time.
Well, it's part of the money part
of this,
too. I mean,
the thing he liked most about Mularkey was his ability to pick. I mean, if you think they're having trouble picking offensive coordinators now, Terry Rubisky was, I mean, maybe the best offensive coordinator in history. Just on that, and again, I like Mike Mularkey a great deal personally, and I think they did not treat him well at the end. But if you support Mike Mularkey as a great coach, you support Terry Rubisky. So big strike out there, Stilly.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's the money part of this on the line. Like, you look at their offensive line, and that's we've heard from people all week. They didn't spend any money on the offensive line, and you're seeing the dividends of that come through now.
And I think it's possible there wasn't great offensive line out there.
There
free agency.
Yeah. I was going to ask. Yeah.
It's fine. McGlinchey, I mean, I don't think he's worth what he got. So, look, in this next free agency, you're going to overpay for guys because you have the money.
Right.
But you're going to overpay for guys you like. If you don't like McGlinchey, you don't force it. I don't blame them for that.
So you don't have any sort of do-over that you would do if you went back?
I would not draft Isaiah Wilson and then quickly forgive myself and say, well, he turned into a different guy. We forgive ourselves. We're absolved. And everybody just be like, okay with it.
Just this last offseason, there's nothing that you can look at and say, yeah, they should have done this instead of what they did.
Well, the free agent class was terrible.
It wasn't good. No. Yeah. I know.
I'd have to go back and look. I mean, I think
there's nothing
better
obvious. There's nothing glaring
than Dillard or better backup plans to Dillard.
And that's going back to,
you know, could you draft the next guy instead of look? I think Skoronski's great.
Yeah,
but they talk constantly about building the protection and protecting inside out. Well, how's inside out working for you right now?
Not
how
great.
About outside in?
Well, but the next
Miles Garrett scares me more than
Yeah, there's
Aaron Donald, quite
teams,
frankly.
Yeah, but some teams have those guys that are, they don't have the edge guy. But, yeah, especially coming – this week is not the week to talk about inside-out protection being the way to go.
So yeah. do you draft the next best tackle or move back a little bit and draft the next best tackle? Is it DeJuan Jones?
Yeah. I mean,
he's been pretty good, yeah. Right?
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. We'll continue our conversation with Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com coming up next. Make sure you check out the great offers from Nashville's Best Deal now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Deals include half off a $20 gift card for Ellison Place Soda Shop, Campione's Taste of Chicago, and more. You can visit thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Robbie and Rex Road. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser, Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com here with us. As he is every Wednesday morning, 8 to 9, talking all things Tennessee Titans. Taking your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025.
All right. Hopefully this is Stilly's last text. He says, Terry Rubisky was a better coordinator than Todd Downing, and Vrabel got to keep Downing after his horrible deal.
No!
Your
God,
thoughts,
please,
PK.
No!
I don't know that Terry Rubisky needs to be compared to anybody. On his own, Terry Rubisky was an atrocious coordinator, and it was the single worst thing that Mike Mularkey did. Todd Downing was fired by Mike Vrabel and replaced. Mike Mularkey refused to do that with Terry Rubisky.
Okay, let me say this. The 2016 Tennessee Titans, which is the first fall I was here in Nashville, the first time I covered the Titans, was a pretty damn good offense. It was a pretty damn good offense. With Terry Rubisky as OC, they were explosive. They ran it. They threw it. Now, why? A lot because they added Conklin and Ben Jones, and Lawan got good, and they had DeMarco Murray, all that stuff. But look at some of their outputs and their weeks without any kind of real difference-making receivers. It was pretty good. It was way better than anything Downing ever did here. I'm on Stilly's team!
It was better than anything Todd Downing did here, but it was a function of the personnel.
So when it was good, it had nothing to do with Terry Rubisky. He had nothing to do with the good offense in 2016.
Terry Rubisky was a Stone Age offensive mentality.
Exotic smash mouth.
I know you're going to go to that quote where what did he say? It was like, run it till it pops or whatever?
Yes. Yes.
I know
okay. If you run it 8 times and it doesn't work,
keep
running it. Listen, you talk to Terry Rubisky, and I did this in Arizona when they had the disastrous trip.
Terry
when they were in Arizona and they stayed over in Arizona and they went to San Francisco. And I had individual conversations with Terry Rubisky and Dick LeBeau, two old coordinators who had been around the game for a long time. And I talked to them about, over the years, how you adapt and adjust. And Dick LeBeau said, adapt or die. And Terry Rubisky said, you do it this way. You stay with this. This is the way you do it. You never deviate from this.
Okay.
Now, which guy is a Hall of Famer?
Well, sure. I mean, yeah, obviously Dick LeBeau's a better D coordinator than Terry Bisci is an O coordinator, but I'm just saying.
We're talking philosophy. The contrast was striking.
Sure.
And, I mean, is Stilley suggesting that they should have kept Mike Mularkey and not hired Mike Vrabel?
I think he
That's the most outlandish, ridiculous. He can't believe that for a minute. He's looking for attention, which I guess Stillman's parents didn't pay him enough attention. I don't know if he's the only child or not. There is no way Jared Stillman believes that. And if he believes it, Chase, I know you're listening and you're about to go on the air. He must be fired immediately.
Speaking of Chase, he texted into our personal text line. Do you guys and Paul think this draft class could be deep enough that it would be worth getting a top three or four draft pick and trading back to acquire more draft capital if you're the Titans? So essentially, just sucking the rest of the way. This is from Chase.
So we're talking about tanking? Chase? Wow.
They're not going to
suck. We got some takes out there today.
They're not going to suck on purpose. It's just I hate that this could. 0%. The worst thing about them being bad so far is that it starts this conversation and that people like this idea of being bad and getting a high draft pick.
I mean, we're talking about Vrabel getting
Titans
fired.
Titans have done with high draft picks. They had number 8. They drafted Jake Locker. Boy, did that save the franchise.
Vince Young
up there at the top. Marcus Mariota. I mean, everybody loved him because he's such a swell guy. But he stunk for the most part.
Right. Yeah, the whole thing, yeah, the idea of, yeah, first of all, I mean, I hope no one actually thinks that there's no player or coach, I don't think, in this league that ever goes through that mindset. I mean, at some point,
I'd like
way
to lose so my film looks bad.
Right. I mean, like, we're talking about Vrabel's job security, which we all agree is fine, but like, people are already starting to talk about that. So, yeah, let's go 4-13. That sounds like a good way to keep it rolling. Come on.
Now, look, they might end up being bad. They're not going to be that bad. No. I mean, I'd be shocked if they end up being that bad. But look, they got Cincinnati coming in on Sunday, and I don't like that matchup for the Titans. You know, Baltimore's coming up. I mean, shoot, even Indy at this point, it's not a guarantee
first
for the Titans.
Well, the presumption is that they'll do well against the Colts in Houston, and that presumption took a hit.
Absolutely. So, I mean, look, they could go off the rails here for the Titans. Now, having said that, like, I expect the Titans to respond and play well on Sunday. I don't know that that's going to mean a win. I don't know what that means for the Cincinnati game. I tell you what, though, we've talked about the secondary, and I know that Cincinnati struggled, but PK, I don't love the idea of Joe Burrow, even if he's hurt, and then T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Mixon and that offense coming in here on Sunday and what that can mean for the Titans.
And there's some PTSD related to the Bengals. They're going to tell you that it's a non-factor, but I can't help but wonder if Ryan Tannehill seeing those striped helmets doesn't have a little something there. I mean, it sent him to damn therapy. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing that he went to therapy after that. But last time the Bengals were here, well, they've been here since then, but I think.
Yeah,
they were here last year.
I mean, it was another
Ja'Marr
close
Chase
game.
Wasn't playing in that game.
Yes.
And the pass rush, let's not forget that. I mean, we look at the weapons on offense. But the biggest concern is, you know, how much more are they going to protect Andre Dillard? How much does that limit the people that they could send out on routes? And Tannehill's lack of mobility is obviously, you know, I put very little of what happened in this Browns game on him.
Yep.
He was helpless. But it, he can't escape much, if anything, anymore. And that's a part of the overall formula also.
I think Tannehill's going to do some one-arm push-ups this week, personally.
A little motivation out there.
That's right.
No. Trying to atone.
Exactly. So on the offensive line, I've been wanting to ask this, and we've been talking about the 2016 Titans today. PK, what do you think? You just mentioned that Mike Herndon wrote about possibilities at your site. How do you view the possible alternatives if it turns out? And I think it's still a while down the road.
Yeah, about 30 seconds.
I think it's a while down the road too. I think they're going to stick with Dillard. I think in a couple weeks, and we don't know how long Skoronski's still out. I think in a couple weeks, if Dillard's still been bad, they'll consider some alternatives. I don't know what those would be.
PK, you'll be back on Friday. Looking forward to that.
Don't block the box. Lock your locks.
Well, you're the breast, man. You are the absolute breast.
Thank you.
That does it for us today on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.